People v. Lee.
Good morning. Everyone may be seated. Before we proceed, I would like the attorneys, both attorneys that are going to present oral argument, please step up to the bench and or the podium and identify yourselves for the record.
Good morning, Your Honors. Assistant State's Attorney Kimberly Reeve on behalf of the people.
Could you say that again?
You can remove your mask when you're at the podium. R-E-E-V-E?
R-E-E-V as in Victor E.
Thank you. Ms. Reeve. Okay. Counsel?
Good morning. My name is Daniel Mallon, on behalf of the defendant, Mr. Edwin Rea.
Good morning, Mr. Mallon.
Thank you.
All right. So each of you will have about 10 minutes to present oral argument. And from that, Mr. Mallon, you may save out some time for rebuttal.
Thank you.
All right. When you're ready, you may step up, Mr. Mallon, and proceed.
Thank you very much. Again, Your Honors, my name is Daniel Mallon. I'm with the State Appellate Defender's Office. I represent Mr. Rea. Now, this is a reasonable doubt case. We're not disputing that my client, Mr. Rea, committed an aggravated battery in this case. What we're asking this court to do is reverse his attempt murder conviction and reverse his armed robbery conviction and remand the case for resentencing on the aggravated battery. First, as to the attempt murder, it's a case-by-case basis, and what we need to do is carefully look at the specific facts and circumstances surrounding this incident. And if we do so, we believe the state failed to prove the element of specific intent beyond a reasonable doubt.
Mr. Mallon, would your position be, in order to establish specific intent, that you need some indicia that he wants to kill him? For example, I'm going to kill you. So is your position that the aggravated battery in and of itself, no matter how severe, is not sufficient to establish a specific intent?
Yes. I think that's a fair position. That's what our position is. And again, you have to look at the facts and circumstances surrounding this offense. And I think, you can just look at what occurred. One of the key things that happened was my client and the co-defendant, when they first approached Mr. Portillo, who was battered in this case, they gave him warning that they were coming. When they initially, encountered him, they didn't hit him in the head right away. You look to some of the state's cases that they cite in their brief.
Would the fact that one of the weapons was a baseball bat, wouldn't that kind of indicate the level of harm they intended?
Well, we have Illinois case law that says just because you use a baseball bat and hit someone with a baseball bat, that is not conclusive evidence of specific intent to kill.
How about when you use it on the person's head, though?
Again, when they initially encountered Mr. Portillo, they hit him in the back.
Right, but the defendant admitted he hit him about 3 times in the head.
Yes, he did. He admitted he hit him 3 times. But, they gave him warning. He was down on the ground, and I think, one of the cases we cite, if they wanted to actually kill him, they could have. And they didn't.
Well, because he didn't die,
doesn't
mean they didn't
want
to kill him.
I don't know. They did not intend to kill him.
So the defendant believed that his girlfriend had been raped by the victim. Is that correct?
Harassment. Portillo, and he testified.
I thought she said
harassment. I believe it was Portillo was posting pictures of her online, sending harassing text messages, and that was the motive to why this encounter occurred. I think that shows they were trying to send a message. He was trying to send a message like, stop harassing my fiance.
Okay, where did I get the rape thing? I thought somebody told the defendant that the victim had raped her.
I
just make that up.
I believe it was.
It's definitely in the record. It's read it in the brief.
It's right. It was rape. It was harassment. It was his fiance, who was the mother of his children, Valerie Munoz, who was involved in the case, had been. He had been harassing her, sending threatening text messages, and rape. And
so they were just going to send him a message that said, "Don't rape her."
Yes.
That was the message they wanted to send?
Yes. Leave my fiance alone.
Is People v. Mitchell applicable here or not applicable?
I believe so, yeah.
Why is it applicable?
That's applicable because that shows, I mean, that was a case where the mother had beaten her 16-month-old child, and the child ended up with severe brain injury and ended up in the hospital for months. And even with that level of injury, the Illinois Supreme Court found that still there was insufficient evidence to prove an intent to kill.
And when she was beating up the child, did she use anything?
No.
Like in this case?
No.
No baseball bat was used?
No.
And you think that that's analogous because it was a mother with a child? I don't think so.
Well, I think it's
a difference with a grown adult taking a bat to another man's head or another person's head. Because didn't the trial just kind of rely on that when he said, I think that there was an intent to kill because the bat was used on the head multiple times? And I mean, I don't think there's any question. You know, maybe one more strike would have killed the guy. But maybe not. But wasn't that where the fact finder kind of concluded that you took a bat and you were battering his head multiple times, which to me says it was an intent to kill. That's what the judge said. I'm paraphrasing.
Yeah, correct, Your Honor. Well, I think the reason Mitchell is applicable here is the injury sustained here was way less severe than what occurred in Mitchell. And in Mitchell, still, like, with that level of injury, they still found insufficient evidence of an intent to kill. So that's why we rely on
this guy spent 5 days in the hospital, had multiple fractures to his head.
Multiple fractures, no surgery.
Lost hearing in his ear, no surgery.
No surgery required.
What about the Viramontes case? The state cites that. They think it's pretty much on point. What do you say to that?
I think that's readily distinguishable, and I think probably the most significant reason is because the defendant in that case approached the victims, gave no warning, and immediately struck them in the head.
So is it the warning?
I think so, yes, Your Honor.
And what was the warning?
Here?
Yeah.
I mean, he said, what's up, and then used a
That's a warning? I'm going to hit you with a baseball bat? What's up I'm going to hit you in the head with a baseball bat.
He at least alerted him of his presence. He said, I'm here, and he notified him that he was coming, and then he hit him in the back. Whereas in Viramontes, the defendant approached the two victims at 3 o'clock in the morning and immediately struck them in the head with a metal baseball bat. And the victims spent weeks in the hospital. One of them requires 24 care for the rest of their lives. I mean, much more severe injuries than we had here.
What about the armed robbery?
Well, the armed robbery, I mean, I think the key fact is Mr. Portillo, he told police that he wasn't sure whether or not he dropped his phone or whether or not it was taken from him. He never felt anyone going through his pockets. No proceeds were ever recovered. And again, my client gave statements to police. He admitted to committing the battery in this case. He gave the motive for why he did what he did was because Mr. Portillo was harassing.
Well, wasn't there a co-defendant type person who testified that the plan was to rob somebody or this person of his phone and marijuana?
Yes, Mr.
And then when the ambulance came and brought him to the hospital, there was no marijuana, no phone, you know, to be found.
Correct. Mr. Neal, who was also a co-defendant and got all the charges dropped in exchange for his testimony against my client and convicted felon, who gave conflicting statements all along. He initially lied to police.
Right, but the judge can weigh his testimony, right? Isn't that what the judge did? Weigh the testimony?
Yes.
We don't get to re-weigh?
Yes, correct.
But tell us why that one should be gone.
Well, Mr. Portillo testified that he wasn't sure whether or not he dropped the proceeds or whether or not it was taken from him. Again, he never felt anyone go through his pockets. No proceeds were ever introduced at trial. And again, my client, he gave statements and he admitted to what he did. He admitted to committing a battery. He gave the motive for what he was doing. And if he's going to admit to committing the battery, why wouldn't he commit to, you know, committing a robbery as well? But
well,
I think
because
he gave,
it's, you know, why admit to everything if you don't have to?
Pardon me?
Why admit to something you don't have to? I mean, and it's another Class X, you know, so.
Correct. But I mean, in light of...
But we, you know, our standard, no rational trier of fact.
Yes, Your Honor.
Pretty tough one.
I know. Yes, Your Honor.
You know, so we'd have to say that no rational trier of fact could have concluded under these facts that the gun and the, I'm sorry, the phone and the marijuana were not taken by force. And then there's the requirement of the weapon, too. But, but the judge, and then you had that other witness.
Yes.
That said,
correct.
This is what we were going to do.
Yes, correct.
All right. Anything you want to add? We're going to give you some time for rebuttal.
No, Your Honor. Thank you very much.
Just have one question.
Yes.
On People versus Jones, the court indicated that when you want to show intent, you have to look at the surrounding circumstances. So what surrounding circumstances can you provide to us that would indicate that he didn't have intent?
I think the surrounding circumstances are everything leading up to the incident. One, again, he alerted his presence to Mr. Portillo.
Okay.
When he initially struck Mr. Portillo, he struck him in the back. Mr. Portillo indicated that at one point he said the whole incident lasted 2 to 5 minutes. At some point he said it could have been as short as 20 seconds. And my client, he indicated that when he left, he believed that Mr. Portillo was either standing or sitting. Mr. Portillo, during his cross-examination, stated that he believed he was able to stand up after the incident. He was not left unconscious. The nature of the injuries are much less severe than in typical cases where they find a specific intent to kill. And if you watch the video of my client was very contrite, and he was, I think, his statements afterwards, he indicated he was shooken up, and he didn't really, I think he intended to commit a battery to deal with the way Mr. Portillo was harassing his fiance. He did not intend to kill him. So.
All right. We're going to give you some time for rebuttal, and now we will hear from Ms. Reed.
Thank you very much.
Good morning again.
Good morning again, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Kimberly Reeve on behalf of the people of the State of Illinois. Today we ask this honorable court to affirm defendant's convictions and sentences for two reasons. First, the evidence at trial established that defendant did have the specific intent to kill beyond a reasonable doubt. And then second, the evidence at trial also established that this was a planned armed robbery based on Neal's credible testimony, and Portillo's cannabis and phone were taken from his person beyond a reasonable doubt. So turning to my first point, the evidence at trial established that he did have the specific intent to kill. Specific intent is rarely proven through direct evidence, as I believe Justice Reyes pointed out, that it can be from surrounding circumstances, so which can include the character of the attack, the use of a deadly weapon, severity of the injury, and evidence defendant voluntarily and willfully committed an act whose natural tendency was to destroy another's life. So what we have here is we do have a severe character of the attack. Portillo was attacked from behind after given only seconds to respond to this what's up that is put forth. He was then immediately struck with the bats, fallen to the ground, beaten 2 to 5 minutes, or even if it was 20 seconds, it would probably be hard for him to tell based on getting hit in the head over and over and over in this amount of time. This is, unlike in Jones' case that defendant relies upon, because we're looking at the way that the bat is used. Jones did distinguish that, cases following Jones distinguished that the way that the knife and the gun were used in Jones was not the same as what you would usually use a knife and a gun for stabbing and shooting.
Those people didn't go to have any extended stay in a hospital either, did they?
No, they did not. The victim that was of concern for the attempt charge had stitches and was just treated as an outpatient, which is, again, vastly different from here, where we have 5 days in the hospital, permanent partial hearing loss, which will be a lifelong injury that Portillo will have to suffer because of this beating.
Although that really wouldn't go to the intent.
The trial court made an extensive analysis of each and every charge. Would you agree with that?
Correct, yes.
And we know that because he dismissed several of the charges based on the gunshot because there wasn't sufficient evidence of the gunshot, correct?
Correct.
Okay. That's my last.
I think it's important to point that out, too, is that we have the testimony of Sabrina Bird, who fully believed that these were gunshots that she heard, and that's probably what she reported into when she called 911, and that's how it was reported. But the fact that it was not gunshots that she actually heard, but it was this beating, also adds to the character of the attack, that how severe it was. We also have the defendant voluntarily and willfully used the bat to beat Portillo in the head, and this was a natural tendency to destroy his life. I think it was very important that the trial court did recognize this and did expand on this, of that severe beating to the head is something that's capable of taking a life, which also follows in line with Illinois courts recognizing that a solid length of wood swung against the head violently and repeatedly is capable of taking life. So that can be the intent of killing somebody. So as a result of this beating, again, the severe injury, 5 days in the hospital, numerous skull fractures, partial hearing loss, all a direct result of this insane character of this. I also want to point out that the reliance on Mitchell is misplaced. While in Mitchell there was a severe beating and it was found that it was not specific intent, the court based its decision in Mitchell on the fact that the defendant there rendered aid. So after this child passed out from a seizure, the defendant there put a cool compress on her, took her to the hospital, rendering that aid versus here, we have nothing. They beat him and they left him in the park to bleed out, which even the defendant recognized when he spoke to Neal later on, that they left him leaking, they left him bleeding. So I think it was just fortunate circumstances that we had Berg in figuring out, you know, what the sound is and investigating it for why Portillo might be alive here today. I would also like to point out that the defendant relies on Deason heavily, but the Deason court was under a plain error standard because it was looking at jury instructions. So with that, the Deason court, while it found that it was not so conclusive that was the only result based on missing the specific intent instruction, we do have the court also saying that it is possible that the jury could have found the specific intent. So if we were given that intent instruction there, it's entirely possible that the specific intent would be found by any trier of fact, which can be then seen later on when we look at the Rolfe case cited in my brief, that is what happened there, which is basically taking Deason one step forward, that they were given that specific intent instruction and they did find it as a jury.
Should we take the fact that they tried to warn them before they hit them?
I wouldn't really consider that a warning so much. You know, it's not like they came up and, based on the facts, it's not like they came up and were like, hey, you know, we're going to beat you. You better take off running. It seems like it was very, very quick. It was, what's up? And then the beating.
What is a warning anyway? Where is that coming from, that a warning means you don't have an intent to kill?
Right.
What would you say?
I honestly don't think that there's really anything that would say that a warning takes away that intent.
I can always ask Mr. Mallon again. I'm not sure I understand that theory.
I just as you, Your Honor, I don't understand it.
Well, what about the other count, the armed robbery?
Yes, for the armed robbery, I think it's important to note that the trial court did find Neal's testimony well. Some parts could be incredible. They found overall that it was credible, especially the fact that this was a planned armed robbery. And the trial court being in that position of being able to view the witness, watch their mannerisms on the stand, and everything like that of how they speak, is going to be a lot different than what we see here in the cold record. So they're definitely in that better position to understand that. So I think them finding Neal credible as to the armed robbery should not be disturbed. As for the taking, there's a big focus on the phone, but I would like to point out that the indictment lists both the phone and the indictment for the taking. The phone and the cannabis for the taking. Sorry, I misspoke. So I think that either one of those items going missing can be reach the element of taking. And it is also important to note that, like, armed robbery is based on can be based on circumstantial evidence, and it has been noted by several courts that if a person is, has their items on them at the time of being assaulted, and then beaten, rendered unconscious, what have you, and then afterwards they have no, they don't have their items, that is usually sufficient to show that there was a taking. We don't have to have the proceeds actually recovered to prove that element. That is exactly what we have here. So we do have Portillo testified that before the beating, he had his phone, he had his cannabis, whether it was in his hands, in his pockets, he wasn't fully sure, he could not fully confirm which one it was. And then afterwards, after being taken to the hospital, he had neither items. There is, on cross-examination, some discussion of whether he dropped his phone at the park, if he had it in his hand, if he lost it. But again, he testifies on cross-examination that he's unsure, he could have. But in any case, we do have the other officer's testimony, though, stating that they didn't find anything at the park. So there was no recovery of the phone, there was no recovery of the cannabis at the park. So that's just further indicative that it was a taking. And then there was also a discussion of that Portillo testified that it would be fair to say, like, he didn't feel anybody go through his pockets. I think it's unreasonable to assume that somebody that's been beaten over the head so severely that they're bleeding and have skull fractures to really process if somebody's going through their pockets at that time. So I don't think that's really indicative that there was, like, not a taking. So, you know, absent a different credible account for where the phone and the cannabis ended up, it's reasonable that any trier of fact could reach the conclusion that this was a taking, this was an armed robbery. So for all these reasons, those stated in our brief, and if there are any further questions, I'm happy to answer this time.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Reed. We'll hear from Mr. Mallon in rebuttal. Is there some sort of case support for your argument about that a warning is some?
Absolutely. Okay. I'm looking right at Viramontes right here.
Okay. And what does it say that suggests that a warning is some?
This court stated, I can read from it, the facts of this case are sufficient to permit the jury to conclude the defendant intended to kill the victims. The defendant approached the victims from behind as they walked down Damon Avenue in the middle of the night. With no warning, he delivered a violent hit to the back of the victim's head.
So that case says they approached from behind and no warning.
And then hit the victims in the back of the head.
All right, so you're saying that giving a warning somehow...
Yeah. Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
Yes.
I'm talking about a case that says that when you tell somebody, you know, we're coming to get you.
No. Okay. I mean, I'm distinguishing the state's cases. Yes.
All right. So I understand your argument now.
Yes. I mean, the argument is that's one of the circumstances that should be considered, whether or not the defendant gives the victim's warning.
All right. Now I understand.
And also, I believe, whether or not the victim initially strikes, whether or not a defendant initially strikes a victim in the head or versus the back, as they did here. So we're looking at Viramontes right here, which the state cites, and they found a specific intent to kill based on the nature of the attack, which was without warning, approached the victims and struck them in the back of the head. And that's not what we have here.
Okay.
So, overall, it's a reasonable doubt argument. You have to look towards the facts and circumstances of each individual case. But again, no case has ever held that hitting someone with a bat is a per se deadly weapon.
Well, that's probably correct.
Yes. We look at Jones, and that was discussed. There was some evidence here that I believe the co-defendant had a gun. There was some evidence from Neal's testimony that the co-defendant had a gun, and they didn't use a gun. And obviously,
so you're saying that sort of helps?
Yes, Your Honor. And that was a key fact that was used in Jones. It was the nature of, you know, they used the gun as a bludgeon as opposed to using the gun, you know, to shoot the victim. Same thing with the knife. Same thing here. I mean, if they intended to kill Portillo, I mean, they could have. If they had a gun, they could have shot him, and they could have stayed there and prolonged the attack, but they didn't.
But I thought they denied there was a gun. I thought there was a kind of walking that back.
Yeah, my client testified that he wasn't sure whether or not Lopez had a gun.
The doctor wouldn't confirm.
There was no evidence of a gunshot wound. Yes.
So maybe there was never a gun in the first place?
Perhaps. Yes, Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor. But
anything else you want to add?
Even if this court, I mean, we would ask this court to obviously reverse both convictions, but regardless, if it finds that the evidence is insufficient on the attempt murder, we would ask this court to remand for resentencing on the aggravated battery.
Okay. Thank you both.
Thank you very much.
We'll take the matter under advisement. Now we're going to recess, and another case will be